restaurant that kind of plays into the style of what you're trying to give your customer. So what I did originally, every time I would open up a new restaurant, I would go booth to booth after setting up the whole thing with my manager.
Thought you were going to say, schedule a trip to Vegas.
Yeah. Well,
every time the first thing I do is schedule that trip to Vegas. Yeah. And
then I could work.
This is Restaurant Unconfidential. I am Norwood.
I'm Javier.
And I'm Alondra.
And we're all here on episode 4, the fifth part of our amazing cream. Cash rules everything around meals to get your cheddar and pay off a lot of bills, y'all. Series. We talked about the kitchen and all the big toys behind the scenes last week. And this week, we're going to jump into the dining room. This episode is Dining Rooms Are Forever. It's the rest to please your guests. We are sneaking out of the kitchen, jumping into the spotlight with our feature on dining rooms. There's a lot that goes into your dining room, and it's the space where you welcome your guests, and you want it to shine. You end up throwing a lot of money at that goal, but we're here to tell you that you may not need to. There are spots where you want to spend more in the front end to save more in the back end, but in general, there are lots of ways to save while keeping that space fresh and engaging. But first, quick fire. Javier, yes. What has a restaurant or bar done in their dining space that's left you a lasting impression on you?
Oh, I go for the vibe. I go for vibe check. The food has to be good, but it's gotta get there. You know, Katin in LA blew my mind. Okay. It's kind of like feels like Tulum. You walked in, it's got the flamethrower.
Right, you say that, I'm already vibing.
Yeah, like, it's exactly that. You're outdoors, lots of jungle stuff. And then the food is from Yucatan. So it matches. Yeah. It matches the whole thing. I loved that place.
Big Oaxaca boy.
Yeah, great food. It's a chef. Wes Avila, he's, and you know, if you go for talk vibe check, 10-5 Hospitality nails it on all of their locations with that. Nice. So that's my go-to. What about you? What is a good space that's
two
left you?
Spots that pop in my head, and they're like night and day from each other. Mm-hmm. Living back in SF, Smuggler's Cove is like literally right around the corner from my old house, and you know, it's one of those like no front like door signage kind of spots, like but it was a tiki bar, and you walk in and it's, you know, small space. They have a basement, a main floor, mm-hmm. but they had turned it into a basement bar, opened that up space of the stairway. There's a two-story waterfall, like everything going in, and then they built a mezzanine, and each all three layers had different kind of vibes to them too.
Nice.
And you have also all this water, all this stuff going on, and what's relatively a tight space, but it opened it up, and you have your mezzanine, so you can see up there from the mezzanine, you can see all the way down to the basement. Yeah. So you turn this relatively small space into this like sprawling three-story like kind of space, and all pirate themed and with a tiki and
all
everything.
Tiki themed, yeah.
But then on the opposite end of the scale, back home in Charleston, we have a spot called Bowen's Island. Mm-hmm. On the way out, if you're heading out to like Folly Beach, and Bowen's Island is literally an island you drive out to right off the main drag, and you go, because we have tons of little barrier islands back home, and like mm-hmm. so the coast is just dotted with them everywhere. And this spot's this little island that's a restaurant, open air restaurant. They literally have big tables, they throw some newspaper down, come out with a shovel full of steamed oysters or something, nice. Just dump it in front of you. You can, you're looking out on the creeks and stuff, there's shrimp boats going by.
Sweet.
Like it's straight up like vibe city, you know, yeah. Like it's exactly like what you think of when you think of like Charleston, the South, like right. the, like, you know, one of the last commercial. Like our fishing fleets and
Forrest
stuff,
Gump.
And like yeah, exactly. That's where like all
boats.
That, yeah. and so yeah, it's exactly like all that. And but yeah, night and day. That one's just a kind of a shack spot, like set up with like almost no decorations and stuff. And it's just like the vibe is,
but it's
nature,
natural.
You're
in the beauty of nature.
And then the other one's like
that.
Creating this like wonderful environment out of like nothing,
out of so what they had, yeah, mm-hmm. to work with.
Yeah,
good points. Yeah. Great.
So the dining room is so much more than a few tables and chairs. I think we just made that point. And even if that is literally all you have room for. So it's the space where you welcome your guests and showcase your craft. And you want it to reflect how you want your guests to feel when they come to your space. I've been to hundreds of soul food and barbecue spots where the dining room is just simple chairs and tables with a homey decor that was organic and tell the story of the restaurant better than a lot of million-dollar dining room designs because it's true to their concept and everything fit. That's what we're going to be touching on today, fit. We're diving into five areas we think are important and have a memorable and having a memorable dining room that brings people back time and time again. We'll be going over a few specific ways to make a splash without spending all that cash. We will start by picking up where we left off last episode by going into uniforms and branded equipment. We're going to go into creating a curated social media experience and setting your fans and have your fans advertising for you. Deciding when full service and self-service is best for you as you incorporate the QSR model across more and more spaces. Decorating and branding your space. And finally, we will talk about your furniture with a few great experience-based anecdotes from our host, Javier.
Nice.
This is Kitchen Unconfidential, and we have a line around the block, so we have to open the doors or there is going to be a riot.
Let's get started.
Let's step right in. Norwood, you said it earlier. We ended last episode on kitchen uniforms.
Yes.
And started touching on branding. Javier, let's talk about how uniforms can help cultivate your brand's identity with your guest.
Yeah, you know, that was actually my biggest marketing piece. Once I embraced the uniforms and the branding behind them, I was like, let's have fun with this. And so what we did is I got the employees to buy in by allowing them to just freedom to express themselves with their uniform. And by that, what I did is I issued, say, a t-shirt, a bandana. And later on, I found out these employees, which was really cool, were having... The manager asked me, what am I allowed to do with my uniform? I said, well, as long as you don't touch the logo on the front of it, but the rest of it, have fun. And I really did trust her. She's a great girl. So she went and had a party, like a company employee uniform party. And they cut up their shirts. Some of them had, you know, the long frills tied with knots at the bottom. Some of them did these designs on the back. Some of the guys had, you know, from their football team had like the sleeves cut off, and it worked really well. It gave each of the employees their own identity, their own brand. It's what I needed to kind of accomplish. So yeah, it worked. It worked really well. So, you know, when does unus formus or one form work better for your concept? I would say when it's a very branded concept outside of, I didn't need to create brands within my individual employees, like Disneyland. They already have the branding of their characters, of, you know, Chuck E. Cheese, of those kind of places that's outside of their employees. So, and a lot of these places typically have a lot of employees, so you need them to stick to a very... you know, strict
guidelines. That's when you start scaling up. Yeah.
You got to stick to a stuff. Yeah. You can't have fun with uniforms at that point when you're scaling. So that's the one time I would say that.
Yeah. Also, like, I think like white tablecloth spot where everyone's, you know, you go to Commander's Palace in New Orleans and everyone's in, you know, bow tie, like button up and stuff. And
I went there. It's like, amazing. Yeah. It's a cool spot.
Yeah. So like certain spots, yeah, you definitely like the kind of like uniqueness, like you want, like part of the show is like everyone's kind of in that kind of like thing, like they're all kind of in the one,
yeah,
like that's the team that's like doing this awesome service, providing all this awesome service,
right? And yeah, they look like a team.
Mm-hmm.
For us, it was like, it, you know, it was a Chicano flair vibe going, yeah, on rock and roll. So it was like I wanted to make each employee look like they were part of the team but had their own style, like, yeah, a rock band. You know, you get,
'cause that's, yeah, the brand, that's the kind of like identity is like that, like you said, rock brand.
Right. Everybody has, like, their own style on stage and they look but they look like a band cohesively.
Yeah. You got like Steven Tyler with the scarves.
Mm-hmm.
You got,
yeah,
like Ian there with black t-shirt. Yeah. Like you have, mm-hmm, like, so you got like, yeah, your punks, you're like this, yeah, that. You got some greasers.
Even
over
color
there.
Wise, like, yeah, I went and saw Papa Roach and I was like, okay, looking at their whole setup. They were going with black, white, red. It was, mm-hmm, that theme of their whole thing. So they were all different looking, but they were all in color. They were all very themed out.
And that's important too, like you're saying, like, for, like, it'd be weird, like, if someone took your logo and put it on a suit. Right. He came in wearing a three-piece suit with chinos. Like, he's like, you said I could customize it. I was like, yeah, but gonna need more of that rock and roll look. The suit's not really. So he wanted to kind of have that vibe, like you said.
And
we
would set that ahead of time. We'd be like, you're getting the bandana because we're trying to make you guys look like rock stars. And so you get to pick where the bandana goes. And it's kind of funny seeing the different characters in your employees, where some of them are like, whoa, I've never been told I can do what I want. You know, and they're very careful with it. But yeah, it is for me, it was more about showing off that the employees are branded and we're cohesive, but we're still individual people and have our own, you know, individual brand we're going on. But
yeah. So what do you do when people are come in it's completely out of uniform, or you come in and like the uniform's wrinkled and wrecked and like just looking rough, like, you know, it's rode hard and like dry, like put up wet, like kind of.
Yeah, we actually would have, because I always kept the extra, you know, things for sale, like shirts and the extra in the back. So what we would do is a employee check when they would show up. They weren't just allowed to clock in and run the floor. It was like, you clock in, you go see your shift leader, or you go see your shift leader, I'm here for my shift. It was a quick overview. And it's a lot more than just a uniform. Sometimes you're talking about perfume and cologne. Yeah, you know, that's overwhelming eating, like, for restaurants, right? So it would be like, hey, or hair, you know, like long hair for women. You can't have that, or
yeah,
you know,
needs to be put up back, pulled back or something.
Yeah. Yep. So it was an overall employee check. You know, that one time it would be like, dude, you didn't tell me your shirt's got all this bleach on it. Here's another one. Let me know next time. Things like that. I mean, it's just constantly checking, but you definitely don't want those costs to get away from you handing out aprons and tees all the time. I love, like on the last, you know, podcast we just did, how you're talking about credits. That's great. Yeah. If you haven't listened to that, go back and, you know, any listeners out there, it's some great pointer on how to use credits to get some of this.
You know
back
what? That's a good way to keep people coming into work on time and stuff too. Mm-hmm. Relate to that. Like,
oh, cool.
Full work shift, you know, you're not calling in, that's a credit, but then, you know, we get a no call, you're late, you do this, that, you
no
know,
credit
that
for
week.
That day. Yeah. Oh, that's a really good, that's
so it's another
credit
way to
system's
answer.
Fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's gamifying what you're doing to keep
that always,
I love it.
That's always super helpful. Like, I know I don't miss my Duolingo days because of that gamified aspect. It has me on there every day. It works. But one thing that I think the viewers, listeners will definitely be able to take some good advice from our experience. So a shirt, you can look at it. It's wrinkled. It's very objective. Like, it's very, like, objective. It's like, that's wrinkly. It can't be wrinkly.
Right.
You need a new shirt.
Yep.
Cologne, perfume, those kind of more sensitive things, smells and stuff. Like, how it's a super tough things to broach, but how, like, what have you done in the past that's like to have these like touchy conversations?
It would be part of their employee packet. So there was a whole page of their appearance in the employee packet that they would sign off. And that's the time where I'm hiring them. So I'm in a conversation with them along with their manager of the location. And so having that open, as we're going down that, they instantly go, okay. And then that's the point where they would ask me, what do you mean about cologne? I can't wear it. Yes, but just be aware that you're cooking or you're in this kitchen or you're in, you know, you're around customers. Don't use it overly. So those kind of things, that conversation's had when they're signing their employee packet. And we would kind of nail a lot of those questions then. So when they would come in and have issues later, it wasn't like out of thin air. It was like, remember, you know, we talked about this. Well, that's something we've got to
work on. Yeah. I mean, like, those can be also very tough conversations. Like, how do you tell someone, like, hey, you smell?
I know. I know. That's why we made it part of the hiring process, so we could have those tough conversations ahead of time. And then when they needed to be addressed, it wasn't so hard. It wasn't so tough.
I think to help yourself out on those, like having, you know, go to the dollar store, CVS, whatever, getting like some of the travel deodorants or things like that, like kind of those things. So if they do come up, you can It's make them very positive. Because I've had the Chase. You know, we have hundreds of employees. Like things pop up. Like things. Same thing at Apple. Like you know, if some younger guys like going out. Get blitzed the night before, come in hungover as hell. You're like, bro, you smell like every time you open your mouth, it's like a fucking distillery. Like, here, we have travel toothbrush and toothpaste. Like, go rinse your face, go rinse off, like, get that liquor smell off. You brush your teeth or same thing. Like, hey, you know, it's not, you know, no one did anything wrong. Like, kind of a little funky. Like, here you got this. We have this for you, though. Here's a solution.
Yeah, that's
we're trying to make it all just about. Like, that's where, if you are having to have these conversations, I think keeping it positive and super objective and like just being like, no one did anything wrong. You're not, like, don't make it an attack or anything like that. Cause it is a super personal,
it's very personal
conversation.
Attack
like, yeah. So, like, making it so it's all positive and like, hey, we got this solution for you. Like, we just need to, you know, fix this.
And
like,
I know a lot of individual restaurants, they can't compete with the Chase centers and stuff where they can have backup stuff like that, but it is I mean it is good to why I put
it's
it
a dollar
in the
or two.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
These are things that are dollar
the travel size stuff. Yeah, you can go walk into Target and grab that
that's
stuff.
That's the thing. Just have
an emergency.
Single, exactly. So
like
if it is like some of those things pop up.
Yeah.
But if, whether any way you do like find a solution, I think the end of the day advice, like make sure it's positive, like it's not any sort of like attack or personal or anything.
They're part
like,
of your family. I
mean,
really.
Exactly. And that's the end of the day. Employees, like it's all like you guys are all in that working together every day. You don't want anyone feeling bad or singled out for things like that. Like,
and that it has some, I have had things come off where people take things very personal.
Totally.
And it ruins the vibe of everything. I mean, you're setting yourself up for the entire lunch or dinner rush is going to be a failure.
Yeah. So it's very touchy, but it's also something that you can't let not go address.
Right. And that comes down to how you get it across them. I had a manager who dealt with a really hard staff in a college town. I mean, down to like, are you kidding me? Like, well, you got to go back home and change.
Yeah.
But
totally.
You know, but she was really, really good at dealing with them and would deal with it in a private setting. Pull them into the office first.
That's
right away.
Too, not public.
Right.
Ever.
Right.
Like, it's
close
all about
the door.
Positive.
I need to talk to you about this. And then she comes out and I goes, what did you guys talk about? She goes, oh, I mentioned that she needed to do this and this. I'm like, oh, great. You didn't pull me in. Like, it's a very, it is your family, you know, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll touch base a little bit on what we talked about in an earlier episode with merch, you know, people liking the merch so much, they take it out and they introduce it to the rest of the world. Social media has actually taken that to the next step and brought, you know, your not only your merch, but also your dining room from your neighborhood to the entire world. Norwood, how do you make it shine so it stands out?
Yeah, so one thing about standing out is like having key items that make you stand out. So curated features can be a great investment. One thing I see a bunch are like the garden walls, like bringing in LEDs. One thing super efficient is like fake neons, like the LED neons. And then even getting custom neons, like not a out of your price range kind of thing. Like there's so many stores and online spots that are working out of China and other countries.
And if you're going to do a neon in that, you might as well do your logo. Might as well do your name,
your logo,
brand,
so
they can picture.
And then you can have, get a good picture of it. But one example that was brought up to us is a bar that does, and we touched on it before, but bring it up because it's such a killer example, providing the ring light and the camera and stuff and for the scene. And what they're able to do is you're able to watermark the pictures and then also email capture. So that's two great things
like
you're
that.
Getting just besides the regular pictures that people are taking with your scenery, but be able to get the watermark on the pictures. And so like a second point of advertising as people look at them, and then the email capture, both great things. Like, so, and then what is that? Ring lights are $40. Little digital cameras, you know, $50-$60. So tie it to a cheap iPad, a tablet or something, get yourself a little setup that's, you know, less than $100. You can have something that's like cranking, really good content out, engaging your customers. It's something that they're centering around and going to as a draw versus just expecting them to pull the camera out and do it.
I'm a fan when they are there to make them do something to show you and give you a reward. I was at a place and some guy was like, do you guys have any coupons, any deals? No, but actually you get a free soda if you post something and just show us you just posted it.
I do that a lot with farmers markets or something where I'm doing something that's more
like pop-ups.
Yeah, like we said, like where it is just almost strictly there for marketing. Mm-hmm. And so if it's something like margins on some of the stuff I have are like really, really good. So it's like, dude, this is cheaper than buying a sticker, you know, giving you like a little bit of food that way you remember it. But being like, you know, you get two, we get a third one for free by just posting on socials or something. Mm-hmm. And then showing like, yeah, show us that you followed us or something like that and being organic, like
follow work. Yeah.
Versus. Yeah. Or like the because people that are organically following you or connected to you, those posts are people going to interact with those down the road. Mm-hmm. And that's great. Like for social media in particular, it's a great way to have that your group there. It's not bolstered off someone else's kind of thing. It's not faux kind of like I'm getting 10,000 like because I've joined this group that helps pump your numbers and stuff. It's like I always say, I'd rather have 100 people that want to buy my stuff
than that were really there and tried it
that are just kind of cruising that might not even be interested. Like you got to go for like, and we've talked about that before of like looking where your customer is and where they're in the buying process and attacking them specifically there. So the strong branding pool of tools, like we had a 7-part series, we talked about those. And where do you put these? I say to keep them very visible, and keep them out of your way. Like, be very smart about where you're setting things up. So don't put something in a high traffic area. You're always got dead spots, especially if you have a bar. You got a corner or something that's dead. You got, if you're a restaurant, look at your front entrance or something like that.
Yeah, look at your windows. Look at your, where do you get the most visibility?
Where are you in? Like, set yourself up for success. Don't turn these things
On that real quick, Norwood, I heard, and this is it's actually really interesting. I heard the most valuable spot to be able to market in a restaurant are the 4 inches above the door handle going into your restaurant. Mm-hmm. So you see a lot of places that take that space for like
and specials
and do banners and stuff. Because, I mean, it's obvious. It's every person not only walking by your front door that looks in, but it's every person grabbing it and they literally stare at it.
Yeah.
It's, it's genius, but you wouldn't think that. I used windows for my marketing and window clings. And that became a really, really cheap, easy way, which nowadays you could just order window clings and throw them up and pull them back down and have a new one. But visibility gives you massive.
Yeah, that's a big thing when you're doing these. Like, keep it visible, keep it well lit, keep it something that's engaging for pictures and stuff. Then tips and tricks, some things that I use a lot. Giveaways are really big. If you're partnering up with someone, talk to them something cheap to give away, whether it's a ticket to your event that you're doing, if you're throwing a party at your bar, if it's you have a new dinner item coming out,
you're doing a pop-up with somebody, you partner with them, right? Get tickets to the event.
Yeah. There's always something that you have. Yeah. If you're advertising something, that means you have something you're selling. If you have something you're selling, you got something you can give away. Think about your, it's all a kind of a gamble. And we talk about marketing stuff all the time. Very rarely we've talked about getting an ad in the paper or something like that. The more old school traditional stuff. A lot of the stuff we talk about is relatively free.
I like when they make it a game. For these giveaways, when I just saw yesterday someone put a gift card hidden under a rock and said, here's where it's at. You guys, come get it.
That's just fun. Michael Jang, an artist up in SF, I follow. He does a lot of drops like that.
Yeah, I like
where it'll be sticker packs, like a t-shirt from his a museum show or something like that. And he'll hide in spots. It's super engaging.
You could give it. It's so awesome. You could literally give it away if you want just on the street. But why not have fun with it?
Yeah.
Why not make people go out of their way? And stuff? And then all they say is, shoot me a video when you get it. We're going to reshare it.
Yeah, exactly. That's all. Reshare. Sponsored posts. Big. Mm-hmm. Setting a budget, getting that out there. One thing that's nice about those with Meta, with TikTok, with a lot of those things when you sponsor and stuff, those let you set. It's pretty easy to get in there and set your audience.
Yeah.
So whether you want to do it location-based, what they're into, what keyword things will come up, what you want the end results to be. There's so many spots. So get in there and tinker around, get those and really highlight
the ages, locations. Exactly. I know you could really dial them in.
So you can really get into that. Partnering with people on your social media stuff. Especially I could bring up IG again, you can collaborate on a lot of posts, collaborate with people, so it's showing up on their walls and stuff too, like their stream, like feeds. Anytime you're working with someone, mm-hmm. and you're kind of drawing into that pool of their crowd.
You know, partnering for me was partnering with like the universities, the colleges. Yeah. Being in a college town, that was huge.
And then you get cross posts on their walls, yep. their forums and stuff, and then that's it goes out to their student body.
Right, which they're gonna have 10,000 new yeah. students coming in. You know, yeah. I need to hit those up.
Yeah. And that's kind of like almost like the cross posting, like similar yes. to that kind of partnering, cross posting. Mm-hmm. Like yeah, to just drive that to cross. And different stuff, and then after you do all this stuff, mm-hmm. like check out your analytics. Like that's one thing, as like I'm doing ads and stuff, always popping in on my analytics. I always tweak my next ad based on that. I'm like, well, if this worked, let me tweak this and let's right. see.
That's smart. What... never tweak stuff without looking at the data. I mean, really yeah, is what you're yeah. saying.
Always have do things that are for a reason. Like right. have a reason for like why you're doing things. Don't just blindly like kind of yeah. like let me well, just try I think, this out. Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Like I try not to like think on things. Like try to know
why you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah, this is all great stuff, guys. We're gonna pivot a little bit, and as we see more restaurants taking advantage of the perks of a quick service model, Javier, how do you decide when you want to use full service? Full or self-service for different items?
Oof. Well, when my family came from full-service restaurants, and I grew up in a generation of McDonald's and fast food. So there was the QSR, the quick service. I was always trying to create the middle road, right? So it came down to, for me, what worked for me. One thing you should look at is definitely your overall costs. When you talk about full service, you know, that has a different completely cost than what would be for like a QSR. Mm-hmm. You know, you're saying full service has, you know, staff costs, but it could be more reusable. What's that?
So you like reusable, you're not throwing away your plates every time.
Yeah.
You have to watch.
COVID changed that. Okay. Yeah. That's a good point. COVID changed that game where I don't like what it did to full service, where now there's not even condiments really on the table. You know, there's a lot of, you used to ask before and a little thing, sauces came in ramekins. Now they're just all throw away. So COVID actually, I saw a lot more things get used one time and thrown out, which I didn't like that so much. I think we were doing a better job before. At trying to limit that,
especially yeah for in-house stuff like yeah. your sauces and your like condiments and stuff, like,
but self-service that I think has come and will never leave. People are now like, look, if I, which makes sense, I mean it helps with not only the staff keeping costs down,
yeah,
but it helps with your customers, where they go, you know, I don't have to wait for the server to ask for a refill. I can go get up and get it. Yeah. I can go get my own silverware, my own napkins. It really did help all of that. But it's definitely, you know, the perception is a cost. So however you're laying out your actual, you know, service, whatever you choose on full, fast casual, quick service, how the perception you're giving out is going to have to be detailed in what you can charge and what you can actually charge and the cost for things that you're charging. So, you know, how can you turn the perception of a single use item and from a negative to a positive. Yeah, I mean, I'll ask you that.
Do like your environmental, like mm-hmm. If you can show like you're using like all compostable products or something like that. Yeah. Like it's definitely
that you recycle, uphill. That you upset. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Because
yeah,
yep. It's definitely uphill battle trying to get someone who's paying to sit down mm-hmm. to use like a singles use or something like that. So mm-hmm. you got to figure out like, because yeah, you go to McDonald's, you're used to getting, you know, a burger and a wrapper or something like that. But you go somewhere, you're getting something like a nice sit down meal.
Dinner plate.
Yeah, yeah. 10. So then you have to kind of think of like, so then, yeah, but there's so many options now. There's a great like pressed fiber compostable stuff where you can get some nice, good looking plates and
everything,
stuff.
Everything bamboo. Like, I mean, bamboo. Yeah. I even feel bad throwing some of those things away.
Yeah, right? But yeah, at Apple, we used we ran the numbers and saw that the water we used to wash stuff was more than, and then two, if you can get paper plates or compostable plates made somewhere where it's water rich. Mm-hmm. And so the effects of them using their water there yeah. and ship it in somewhere that's more drought heavy, like the Northern, Central, and Southern California. Mm-hmm. where you have less access to water. So it's maybe not necessarily where you are exactly. Like maybe they're, because if they're making it somewhere, you know, else. Right. And then so looking at that, so you can be like, you know, this is our environmental, and like advertise that to your clientele. And the same thing at the Chase Center. Everything was compostable, recyclable, because we just didn't have trash cans on the general concession, because we made sure everything we served was compostable or recyclable.
Right.
So, and you didn't come in with bottles. You didn't come in with anything to throw away. So if you go to the Chase Center, there's basically only compostable and recyclable trash cans everywhere. Wow. And so it's another thing too. You can kind of be like, oh, we have a culture of compostable, like sustainability. That's across the
whole perception, and the cost has to match it. Right. You can't think just because it's, I'm spending so much on this and it's a one time, they're going to pay for it. I mean, you really have to match what you're charging. Educating community to your service style is a big thing. And so I had to, you know, actually hang a sign that said, here's step one, here's step two, here's step three.
Yeah.
This is how the flow is going to go. And I mean, it's an educational process. We're learning of new products coming out all the time in the industry. So we're trying to trickle that over. The other thing you need to take into account is a restaurant, you have people from all over the world coming to eat there. And so they might not understand, why is America doing it this way? Or why is California doing it this way? Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of that. And
I like that one, two, the very simple, like, here's step one, two, three.
Yeah.
And it's prominent. That way no one feels bad for not knowing it too.
Right.
Cause that's, everyone has their first day. Like every customer has their first time eating a burger, you know?
It was a simple board. Like step one, come up and order, you know, take a look at our menu, order here. Step two, sit down. We will take care of this and this. And step three, your food will be brought out to you. It's hot. Those simple things, but it did help.
Meeting the customer halfway instead of getting frustrated that they're not doing it right. And that's when you're winning, kind of like in that like mindset.
Yeah. And then that comes back to a well-trained staff. I mean, they have to get really, really well trained on, you know, being able to trickle that across to them. But so educating your you know, your community about this, your service style, educating your staff on maybe where things you even buy from, what you're doing on the back end that they might not be aware of. And then something we hit on last podcast is like a self-service, you know, kind of digital ordering kiosk. That again is another way you're going green. I mean, you're removing mistakes from your employees, but you're figuring out a way to streamline the process. And
what do you think about going from like not only like self-service to just total like new points of service, like separate like to-go window or like those spaces like If you are doing like DoorDash or something, like those totally separate like pickup centers.
Yeah, I think they're genius. Sometimes I like how they narrow them down on you can specifically order from them.
And then you can have kind of like your best, what we call your stars, like your menu items and those real earners for you.
Yeah, it almost makes those stars stand out more. Like they have a particular window to get those burritos from. That makes it look cool. Yeah. So that thing's really smart.
Easy decision. Like the more you can make it, like at the end of the day too, like whatever makes your customer like easier to make that decision to come buy with you, whether it's doing self-service, that quick to go window,
right,
whatever greases those wheels makes it easier to get that. That's the number one thing for at home. That's the number one thing that gets people to buy stuff from you is making it as easy as possible.
I was lucky to see all the mistakes happen with my family's restaurants, or I've seen it from the customer side where I would be like, gosh, I mean, at McDonald's, I could just go get my own soda. I'm sitting here waiting for the server to finish up with those tables
and that's something that
burning my mouth and I can't write. So
that's something that's really, I think, insanely important too. That's something you just said, is trying it yourself and seeing one thing I've always pitched, especially when we have these spaces where it's like setting up a station or something, and like Apple or the Chase Center, spaces where it's like presenting, getting a space ready for a crowd to just come destroy you.
Right.
Like that kind of busy kind of thing. Same thing with the quick service, most quick service models, like a taco, like, you know, stepping out. And even if you're not enjoying it, stepping out on the other side of the counter and looking at the counter, you as the owner going in, tasting, the management should have like, go in and taste. Like,
I spent more time seeing it from the customer side than the experience they were getting. That was it. I didn't have to focus on cooking. I didn't have to focus on this. A lot of that came from my family. It was more like I'm coming up with a completely new concept because McDonald's nailed that, but I don't want the fast food and pre-done for me.
Yeah.
Full service, I don't want to pay full service and have, there's that mesh. So fast casual is like what I started with and really helped pave the way with the locations.
Yeah,
with
that. And you learn so many things by just stepping out and enjoying your product for what it is. Yeah. And be like, and you see that thing like, oh, I need this 1-2-3 thing, the signage, because right. Yeah, it is, you know, not intuitive. Like, how does someone order know how to order correctly? Or how does, you know, like these, yeah, these seats are uncomfortable. Like, right. I need new seats.
Yeah. I'll get into that when we talk about some of these, like laying out the booths and stuff. It's definitely, you cannot, you're pigeonholed and stuck if you ask any employee.
Yeah.
Because they also aren't seeing it. They're just hearing this.
If they're eating, they're going, staying, you know, they're getting the thing. They're going to some other out of the way part of the dining room. They're not seeing it like a customer. They're not going in there and enjoying it like a customer. They're like, oh, I'm grabbing a meal at work. Let me just, you know, do my staff meal out of the way or whatever. But they're not going up there and going through the order process. Yep. They're not going through like, getting the drinks the right way from the bar kind of thing.
Yeah, and they never do. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're coming in day one from an employee. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great, guys. Staying on the topic of the customer experience, Norwood, what are a few keys to successful decorating in the dining room?
One thing, and we've brought this up before, is dining room should be always in transition. Mm-hmm. Not day to day, but you know, every 5 to 7 years, even the best dining room should have some sort of renovation or freshening, the new life to it.
And so, the reason I'm going to hit on that real quick, I've heard because people don't want to spend their money over and over, your regulars, and see that it's not going back into where they're where they're putting their money in. So you got to show them that look what you're. Same guy's been coming here 5 years. Same family's been coming in here 5 years, and it happens every time. You revamp the booth. You put a new coat, fresh paint on the bar. They go, oh wow, you got to give them that.
The paint thing is something, you know, you and your staff go in there on a Sunday, you're not open, throw the fresh paint down, move stuff quick, freshen things up, wipe down. But that's, you know, a couple $100 in paint, and you've done renovations that people are going to think is like, dude, I don't know what happened since last week, but these guys must have dropped like a couple, like 10 grand.
Yeah, it looks cool in here.
But so, and that draws into, I look for a low spin, big impact items. Mm-hmm. So when I do low spend, inevitably I'm like, oh, I can get something new. So whether it's I get the crafts hat on and I'm doing crafts kind of thing and doing a couple cool little features like that, some cool things I saw on socials or something, what other kind of fun people are doing. But it's a good way you can kind of find yourself that signature item too. You can kind of do a little trial and error with them when you're not spending a ton. You can kind of play around with some things that are a little more unique too. And like I just said, a little elbow grease goes such a long ways, whether it's kind of getting your hands dirty, doing your own crafting, kind of getting something cool going. Because some of these things are simple as hell. And
I redid my front door myself, but I made it look really, really old. It went from a regular solid color door to I wanted to make it look old and vintage. And so I spent the afternoon on the deadest day with, you know, tinkering around like a craft, made it look so cool, just the front door. And then from then on, everybody, oh my God, this place looks great. It was a door.
One key signature item. Yeah. That's it. Doesn't have to be the whole thing, but it's like a couple key item, one or two things. Doesn't have to be the whole thing, whether it's like you have your counter and you put a little shiplap on the front of it or something like that. Just something that sets you apart, that just has that little bit of touch, a little bit of like shows the attention to detail too. Like, it doesn't have to be a big thing. It can be even more in the details. Customers notice that, and then in their minds they transition to that, to like, oh, if they see the details of making sure like all these little knobs, every single knob is like this different one. They've like, looks like it came from a different little vintage shop and something like that.
Or you involve them in it. Like, I'll give you an example of the pinata. I hung a pinata in the restaurant. Every time that we had a section of the menu called Little Amigos. And every time Little Amigos would pop up on the POS system, before it would allow you to clear out, it would ask you, did you give the child a candy from the pinata?
Yeah.
The server, I literally systemized it to where it's like, I don't want them thinking for themselves, because I saw one server did it to one kid. Next one, she forgot, and the kid's bummed staring at the pinata the whole time.
Super bummed.
Yeah. So I was like, it's a simple thing. I'll jump in the back, I'll type it in, put it into the POS system. And it was cool because they would walk over and they had a rope where they would undo the rope and the pinata would drop in the middle of the restaurant.
That's awesome.
And then the kid would go and stick his hand in, grab a candy, and then they would rope back up to the roof. And that kind of stuff, if you involve them into your dining room, into the layout, it's huge.
And something that, you know, someone could get that pinata stick it up in the corner, let it get dusty and crusty and look like shit in like a year. Honestly,
that's what happens. I mean,
or someone you can use it and same cost, same pinata. Yep. You know, one's not costing more than the other, but you know, a little pulley and some string, and you know, a little bit of like staff buy-in. Mm-hmm. You have a really cool feature.
Yeah.
And versus someone who's just letting that die in a corner, and then that just looks disgusting after just it's because those kind of things too. They get dusty, and then so that brings up my next thing. keep your spending in check. That way you're not married to the items.
Yeah.
Be willing to get rid of them.
Yeah.
Be willing to clean house.
Be afraid to mix it up.
But then when you do spend on things that are permanent, so that way you do have quality in. Because if you do plan on having something permanent, make sure it looks like it's supposed to be there forever. Don't have something that you're trying to keep permanent that is getting gnarly and nasty and beat up. If you have like, you're doing chinos, so you get a cool rock and roll outfit. You know, from some like cool artist or something. He's like, I got Santana shirt. Put it behind glass. That way it lasts forever. Don't have it just sitting out so it's getting like a little dusty and torn up and stuff. If you want something to last forever, make sure you take it care of and give it that like space and like the quality you put that buy into.
I would even put spotlights on things I hung.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I hung track lights and they say a lowrider bike, spotlights.
Exactly.
A guitar,
yeah.
Spotlights.
Give like, it the right space it needs. Right. Like you do want to spend correctly on some of those kind of things. Partners, this is where you've just like been such a good champion of like telling people to get out there and ask. Beer and sodas, your Hormel example at Chase Center. We had the Jameson City Bar, so it highlighted all the neighborhoods of San Francisco, and it was a Jameson sponsored one. We had I can't remember the name of the rum. It's like number one rum in the Philippines. Like was a partner there. Beautiful artwork and stuff. Amazing Filipino culture in the Bay Area. So it's highlighting, it's connecting you one of your local communities. And then we had our clubs, branded clubs, American Airlines, Pepsi, and Budweiser, all fully branded, but the same thing. They bring in those
cups.
They'll
do it
all. They do all these things. So it's to help offset some of your costs.
It's a marketing, you know, wing for them.
Yeah. So it's stuff that you can do as a mom and pop. Like you've explained, like as you're growing and getting sizable, it's something that you can go in and have this another conversations. You're like, I'm building out this space. Let's get big boy, projects. Like we're doing.
You're the one paying the rent. They would give anything to go and get that premium real estate or have 1,000 people look at their logo.
Yeah. So signature items are a great way to stand out. They can be, you know, something fun and cute like we've talked about. They can be messy as hell. Talking about, you know, Texas Roadhouse style of peanuts on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, those are always fun bar. And that's totally – the second you see – peanut shells on the floor, bowls of them at the bar and on the tables and stuff, you know, there's a certain vibe. You're like, all right, get a fucking beer in me. We're about to have some
sit at the bar,
boot scooting boogie good time. Like it's that kind of or you know, they don't have to be polite. You know, you go to Dick's, you get the hat
They
write like some fucking mean ass, little name, nickname for you. And they're giving you a hard time the whole time, but it's a signature item that keeps that place
on purpose.
So it doesn't have to be I've got to be super, but it's also that Dick's, like you just said, with the kid wanting the candy and the piñata and the next one didn't get it. Same thing with Dick's, like picking on people. It only works if it's fair and even across the board.
Right, there you go.
And it's always, and whether your thing's positive, it's a goof, it's whatever, making sure the love is spread across the board.
Yeah.
So even if it is kind of a teasing, like kind of thing, you know, make sure everyone's taken care of in that aspect and they have that attention. They know they're being seen at your space. One thing, anything you can take home is going to be, you know, that's free advertising. So if you're at the bar, you got the plastic cups that are branded with, I used to work at a bartend at a Salty Mike's back in Charleston on the dock. And, you know, you have the little plastic cups that are cheap as hell for us to have, big giant sleeves of them. But everyone's going back on their boat and then the boat's going, they're going out. And like, those are the cups that live on that boat now. And it says, so every time they go on the boat and having a couple of drinks out there, it says Salty Mike's. And then right when they get back to the dock, where's the bar that they have to pass to get to the parking lot?
And then they all want.
So exactly. They're all going to, shit.
It's massive. Because then you come home and you put it on your refrigerator and everybody local goes, what is that? Oh, when I go out there, I need to try that place.
Yeah.
It adds and adds. I totally agree. We used to do these 40-ounce pitchers and I used to buy, we used to do a 30, every Thursday, it was called 40 Ounce to Freedom. And we would just, you come in, it was $4, you know, 40-ounce pitchers.
Yeah.
And they weren't branded or anything. They were just clear plastic. Finally, when I got enough money coming in, I was like, you know what? I'm going to brand those too. I started seeing them just flying. Like, they were getting stolen left and right.
As you bring that up. So,
Which is fine.
Yeah. Whataburger in Texas.
Yeah.
They have the table tents, and they're stolen. They have numbered table tents.
Yeah.
Everyone steals them. Yeah. If you're in high school, you know, you've got your football number hanging out on a table tent in the front of your car. Like, I had one is like 42, so I had a little zero on the end. Yeah. Like,
It's like steal this, you know.
But
like,
they have cases of them in the back because they don't. That's how I did.
They're like boxes,
dude. They're like, oh, don't take those. Yeah. Here's three. Don't take them. Yeah. Here's one more. But don't you take them? Here, take. Yeah. It's good because it's like, oh, that, like, ooh, I'm not supposed to have this, and that's what makes it cool.
Yeah.
And, but they have cases of them in the back because they're like,
wait, dude, I knew what was
make
going
sure,
on.
Yeah, yeah. Frisbees make a killer to go kids plates.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Branded Frisbees is a to-go kit, especially if you're in that fast cash kind of QSR kind of space. If you're brew pub and like,
if you're in front of a beach, could you imagine?
Beach, anywhere where there's lots of space for kids to run around.
Yep.
Give them something to play with. Like,
Your kid will want to go buy something there just to get to play.
Curated scenes. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about like more like kind of quick social media kind of spots like that, low spin spots. But then there's some big spin stuff that can like be centers for your space. So curating specific scenes, barrel and wine rooms, those are huge. Yes. And those are spaces that you can turn into event space or a special dining area. Have a table set up in your wine room and then have a special like chef's table in there with your somm pouring special wines and stuff. And so you can really get same thing with your barrel rooms. You have your aging barrel rooms. We have a place here in town, Rotten Hammer.
Yeah, they
nailed
it.
The whole bar is surrounded by aging barrels. It's a buy-in program. Mm-hmm. So it has advertising for local businesses on there, so everyone is like wants to get in.
And they even just opened up a side thing, like you're saying, an extra room, where you can do catering.
And it's great.
A group in there.
It's something that's visual when you are the customer walking in, but then it's another another profit center. And like as you're
another
trying
social
to make,
media post area. I mean, it is totally the visual.
Meat production or aging rooms are great,
especially
now seafood. Dry aging or seafood.
I see a lot of glass. They want to make it like right up in front.
Yeah, yeah. You want it. You have these steaks. You have subprimals of beef or something like that. You have these whole fish. Mm-hmm. Like you have all this stuff. You have these fish, beautiful fish hanging down. You have big pieces of beef and stuff hanging. You have all this stuff going on. So beautiful. And like, and even seeing the people in there cutting it, producing
I
it.
I love that.
You know, butcher and whites with the big, extra big apron and like doing have your the big knives you're cutting with and bringing out the salt. To cut through some bone and stuff, and it's all super visual, and it's all like as a person, if you're in a steakhouse to buy steak, you're a meat person, you're not going to be turned off by this. This is all stuff you want to see, and you're like, damn, this is really cool. They're going that extra step. They're doing this in-house. They're making this. I'm like, what I'm going to get is about to be off the chain. And then so when you get that price tag, hey, your dry-aged beef is $120. Like, like the steaks, this 14-ounce ribeye is $120 bucks, but then you can turn and be like, hello.
But the guy just cut it back
there. Yeah, he saw that.
He
walked in the place. He saw how cool that was, right? And they're like, damn, that was pretty cool. Yeah. Okay, 120, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I love how they're taking it. So, like, it's almost like you're guiding people towards the social media aspect of, I've seen this. So, like, a big display. They're back there cutting. It's a glass thing. And at the bottom, it says something like, remember to post us or remember to share us at whatever or their thing. It's almost like telling them, hey, this is a good spot to video and post and share. So
the distilleries and breweries, brew pubs, all your production is a great feature. That's how you see them open and stuff. And then this is a great tip for people. These can be ancillaries for helping you to get a liquor license, a beer, like your beer license and stuff. Because it might be closed down in your area to get a liquor license, but look at what you can have as a distillery and how easy it is to open a distillery. Is it worth investing? Is it $250,000 for me to just get a liquor license because I have to basically buy out an old restaurant? Or can I open a distillery with $100,000, have production distillery space and the equipment, have that as a beautiful feature in my space, but then also I snuck under kind of the ropes and kind of got a I was able to get my liquor license because I'm in production of liquor, not just a bar.
I'm seeing a lot more of those opening up.
Yeah. And
taking advantage of that.
So there's like ways you can use these cool feature spaces as a way to get licensing, a way to get bring in really cool spaces. So it's like you end up spending a lot on these things, but it's also something like I said, with the liquor license thing, you might have, instead of spending a lot to get your liquor license this way, the traditional way, you might be able to have some production, something you can sell. So it's like, and it costs less overall. So you get so many more benefits by being creative and kind of thinking a little outside the box. Mm-hmm. And then, like we said before, open kitchens. That's, you know, and then table side stuff. Like, these are great ways to bring that. Table like, table side can get a little hokey. Like,
quick, the salads, the guacamole, the like desserts. Some of those,
but then, like, when they are cool, they work really well. Or they can be the whole feature of your restaurant, like a Brazilian steakhouse or something like that.
Yeah.
So it can be like the whole vibe of your place.
Yeah.
Or it can
they're
be
cooking
like a cool
literally
thing
at your table. Mm-hmm. That's all you could do. I love, I like that.
Go to New Orleans, you see like Banana Foster, some of that stuff that's done well and super traditional. So, like that one, just I would say it's a little hokey if you like kind of are doing something that's kind of like played or dated or whatever. But it's also going to be something that's hella creative of like, something that someone's like, wow, this is super baller. Like, we're doing Banana Foster with the flames and stuff.
Yeah,
or like,
the shavings. And you need to show that off. Yeah. Cool.
Great. So, Javi, we're going to go back to something that you had touched a little bit on earlier. Dining room furniture. Do you recommend finding the cheapest thing or you can or not?
No, I mean, it goes back to the feeling you're trying to give your place, right? So do you spend it on quality? Do you spend it over quantity? For me, it's really how does your style of restaurant, how many times are you turning over that table? Is it fast food? So you're not needing to make the place comfortable. You can put literally plastic chairs and tables. Are you charging $120 steak and you need to make it nicer? People are expecting a $120 seat when they sit down. So it really has to match your concept. It has to match your menu. Some of the things I've actually just noting here, you know, if you want quick turnover, you're going to even do certain specific things. Like Vegas is really good that I go to get a lot of ideas for concepts because they have endless money. They have the best chefs. They're going to nail it and however they're developing it. Mm-hmm. And you start seeing and you're like, wait, why don't they have anywhere for me to sit? Well, they don't want you sitting. Why is the carpet so ugly? They don't want you looking down. They want you looking up at the casino, at the money, at that. So there's a lot of things you put into the layout of your restaurant that kind of plays into the style of what you're trying to give your customer. So what I did originally, every time I would open up a new restaurant, I would go booth to booth after setting up the whole thing with my manager.
I thought you were going to say... schedule a trip to Vegas.
Well,
every time the first thing I do is schedule that trip to Vegas.
And then I could work. Then I could come back. Actually, I probably did do that, but I would sit there and schedule a time with the managers and the head managers myself. Before opening the restaurant, we would go and have a manager session and we would bounce from booth to booth to booth. I wanted every single person that was managing that restaurant, the shift leaders, myself, to sit in it like we were dining if it was at least 10 minutes. And a lot came from that. Like I would go around real quick and go, do you like this seat? Do you not? One manager would be like, that light right there is just blinding me the whole time. It sucks. Yep. This other guy goes, but the AC is like killing me. It's like, dude, I'm freezing. So those things really tightened up the whole dining room. It goes beyond the booths and the comfort of it, but it's after you actually lay it down. You got to figure out if it works for your space. So, I like to buy things that are repairable. I know we talked about that with repairs. When you're looking at things like, you know, you're going to need to repair a booth. Look at cutting that booth up. Don't get a back booth that is going to go the length of your restaurant going, my, that's a big piece of leather I'm going to have to get next time a little rip happens. Or I'm going to be patching this thing up. I would do smaller sections. And so now I knew if a booth back needed to be replaced, I can take that 4 foot, you know, little section off, replace it, make it easier. So when you're laying out the layout of it, also keep in mind the repairs that are going to have to be made with it. Is there somebody even in your area that can repair the booth that you're going to have? But it is ultimately, you know, making the level of your concept is going to match the level of your furniture and of everything else going on in your four walls.
Yeah. The, like you say there, that's one of the few things that your customer touches that translates the level of quality to your place. Mm-hmm. So it's like if you're charging, you know, $120 a steak and are doing like 10, 12 course dinners, and then you sit somewhere and it's pleather, vinyl,
yeah,
on the seats and stuff.
You're
and
done.
That's the one thing the customer's touching on all night.
Yep.
Or the tablecloth, yep, is like polyestery and feels like just trash, mm-hmm, like cheap, cheap, cheap. Mm-hmm. Like it's not an 800 count. It's like 8 count.
Yeah.
Thread. Like it's, yeah, it's,
I mean,
rough.
But it all does have to eat. I've been at places where they're like fast food, mm-hmm, and I go to get the napkin and it feels like one of those nice thick, they're disposable still, but they're the, yeah, thick ones. And I'm like, they could have given me a cheap one. I would have been, yeah, okay with it. So you got to match everything, the textures, yeah, the feeling, the comfort.
Yeah. Cause those are the few place spots where there's a tactile connection for your customer, mm-hmm, that, you know, we use all five senses, and like, you know, just as much as the visual stuff tells a story, the tactile stuff is going to tell the, yeah, same story. So just like you're saying, is this napkin? Like, it's such a small detail,
everything,
that people could overlook, but it's like, what is this napkin telling me?
Yeah. You know, like, what? Your mind goes, yeah, to that. What is this telling me, that napkin I'm feeling right now,
yeah,
that I paid for that burger?
Yeah.
Could it have been $10 if I didn't get this napkin, but they charged me $12?
Yeah.
That kind of like stuff, like, goes through your mind. Yeah.
You're like, this is too nice of a napkin. Like, I'd rather just have like a place that's just making a greasy, greasy,
yeah, give me a $10 burger, but I don't care about the,
yeah,
napkin being,
yeah,
this nice.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all that. You got to look at humans.
Yeah, 12 course dinner. I want, you know, I want my fanny on.
I want the,
know,
cloth.
Silk.
I want the cloth.
Yeah, I want, you know, 800 count, like, like what's it, tablecloths. I want like good. When I was at Cordavi, yeah, we'd sent our napkins based on the courses because we were doing, you know,
oh, cool,
top 20 new restaurant in America, yeah, Esquire, like best in Charleston 2 years in a row. So Charleston's a heavily competitive,
that's
food,
awesome,
city. So you got to really think about the experience of your customer. So yeah, not only are we making sure, you know, chairs are comfy, nice, all those little things. But yeah, when you're having a steak and you pick up your napkin to wipe your mouth, you know, it smells like truffles, or same thing with their, yeah, lemon for fish courses, or like having these like herbaceous flavors, yeah, and smells coming through, and like kind of thinking that next level.
I've had that, a pistachio smelling warm cloth, mm-hmm, that comes to you after, you know, the dessert. Yeah, that's really interesting. But yeah, one quick example of last thing we'll leave on with a booth is I was getting my booths made. And I remember I went out to the factory in Los Angeles. I'm checking it out. I really wanted to see where everything was getting done. And then I quickly realized, I'm like, wait, these booths will look a lot nicer than mine. So I go over there, we're checking them out. And the guy goes, well, those are for J-Lo's restaurant. She's building a restaurant called Madres, and those are her booths. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Well, what kind of money is she throwing down? Like, I was interested in, you know, what kind of comfort is she giving? It was, I mean, it couldn't be done normally. You're not going to use real leather on everything. You're not. They literally put baseball stitching on all of the stitching. So it's a whole nother, yeah, level. But then he even told me, the booth guy told me, he's like, but you got to see how expensive her menu is. And
yeah,
I'm like, he gets it. He totally gets it, that quality needs to match, because no one is going to go spend $500, yeah, on a couple eating dinner there, or $250.
Yeah. I did a stage at the Cloister in the Georgian, uh-huh, room in Sea Island. It's where, mm-hmm, the G8 summit was, what it was held. I think it's the G8. But they did one of those like global conferences there. I was there visiting a chef that was working to get them to be the first 20-star resort. So they had a 5-star resort, a 5-star restaurant. So they're trying to get
the four
to up to 5, or another restaurant, and then a spa up to 5-star. Like, but they had gold brush plating, like everything. So the plates themselves were a couple $100 a piece. And yeah, I mean, it's that quality,
yeah,
like, you match up the quality of what you're charging, what people expect and stuff. Right. And it's those detail stuff that you have to hit. You have to like have, you know, if you're saying you're this quality and stuff, then you, right, have to like be marking those things. Mm-hmm. Like, and people touch things, people, mm-hmm, smell things. Like, it's all those little details. You can't just eyes and taste, yeah, only.
Be
like,
loyal to the brand. Be loyal to your brand, right? What you're doing. The, yeah, overall feeling. Yeah, look.
That's great, guys. So we're going to hop into a question that we have from a listener.
Q&A. Callers.
Ring, ring, ring. So this guy says, I am opening a Korean barbecue place. When it comes to bigger parties, do you recommend seating them in the middle of the restaurant or having a separate room for them? I've heard people ordering cool things makes the people around them want the same thing. What are your thoughts?
Pins, totally, like the space and stuff, like, mm-hmm, and the noise level. So Korean barbecue, you have griddles going on everywhere. You've got hoods on every single table. Usually got K-pop blasting on the TVs and on the audio. So it's a rustly, bustly kind of spot. What you were talking about just a second ago with dining room furniture. One thing we didn't bring up that I love are simple partitions.
Yes.
Curtains. Little partitions, like movable ones, like we have for a set here.
I had wheelable planters, like big planters that you would wheel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So mobile things, so you can make a very kind of like temporary, kind of thin, delicate little border.
Yeah.
But something like that on those kind of spots. Them. Yeah, that helps a lot.
Especially with like when you do have small two tops or four, like tables next to each other. Yeah.
If I go date night with the missus, mm-hmm. and I go to that steakhouse, popping 120 for a dry aged ribeye. What delicious tasting.
You want that partition.
And if I see a fucking half dozen kids on someone's party from fucking the Sanders like family reunion over there at that part of the restaurant, and I see half a dozen kids ripping up and down the aisles of the restaurant, I will lose my mind.
I know.
It's like, there you goes put your dinner. Them in a fucking dining room, private room.
Put them in their own room.
So it just depends. Like, yeah, if that group's not in a private, and so in that setting, like where it's like basically if you can hear the clink of two glasses clinking together and it's supposed to be able to hear that in a dining room, and it's that kind of noise level, private room for parties. But if it's who let the dogs out.
If it's
out,
a party,
if it's the Baja men are fucking hitting it up, and they're like, it's like, who let the dogs out? Yeah, fucking put up a little curtain, something simple, or put them in a space, like, or just, here's a couple tables together. You get the, you know the deal. Like, it's a party right here. Like,
I would say open it up, like, along that. You also don't want to make your restaurant look dead. So say you only have two tables and this massive party, I'm not going to go hide them. No. I'm going to put them in the dining room to attract more. Yep.
So, timing. So, if you have 5 o'clock, you have a big group come in, put them in the front, and then draw.
And then,
in.
They walk in at 7, I can't take them there because I'm going to be slammed.
You guys are in the back because you're going to be here till 9:30, 10. Yeah. And I don't want every single one of my guests having to like wiggle past you.
Yeah.
And then,
and losing on other big tables.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or exactly. Like, you don't want it to look like you're so busy at 7 o'clock that they can't fit you.
Right.
So
or you can only get fit in the back little room. Yeah. Totally. So it is timing for me because I have had big
really
dining rooms.
It would be less than that's the, less on my radar. So just.
And I use the partitions to actually block making the restaurant look so busy or making it look so dead when I'm not busy yet. Like Vegas does really good job really at good that. That. Hotels do really good job
if
at that.
If you've got multiple spaces in your space, they kind of block off.
You open it up as you need it.
Back in Charleston, there's a lot of second floor.
Yeah,
because the spaces would be similar or smaller, so it's easy to kind of just not let them upstairs, and then your one bottom floor fills up. Sitting, if you got people out front, you got a nice little deck or something, you're just getting that loaded up at 5 o'clock for half. That's where you get that happy hour on the deck. You guys get loaded up out there, like,
cool.
So hopefully that answers. Definitely. Reach out to us on IG and any Facebook or any way to get out some questions to us for next week. We will answer to the best of our abilities. But that concludes the fourth part of Cream Casuals, Everything Around Meals series. And we highlighted our amazing dining rooms and how to make them stand out in a crowd. You want people to come back again and again, and it takes more than a great food. Like we said today, if you can hit all five senses,
all of them,
you're winner
chicken
dinner.
You don't
eat
with just your mouth.
That's right. You hear the food. You hear the crunch.
Yeah,
I
need the crunch.
You feel the cushions. You feel it. You hear. So with these tips, you can tweak your space or find it into something your guests will want to return and share with their friends and family. Now that you have a great dining room, we want to be diving deeper into marketing and getting involved with local events. Building up an event-based catering program is a great way to open up catering your space and get the community involved with your advertising. A surefire recipe for success. So we'll see you next week. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we appreciate you guys.